Hello, welcome to the Roll Together podcast. Thank you for joining us for these podcast versions of our streamed shows from Twitch. You can always find our schedule of upcoming shows at twitch.tv/rolltogetherrpg/schedule. Please do leave a review and we look forward to adventuring together.
Hello and welcome, peasants. I mean, fans, nemeses, and bewildered bystanders, too. Talking is a free action. I hope you're listening closely. My name is the Fae, and I represent the Question Masters, your favourite kindly overlords. As I'm sure you know, we are the multiverse's omniscient higher beings, and we are insatiable in our quest for yet more knowledge. There is always more to learn. And so, to further that quest for knowledge, I hope you will join me today in welcoming a new guest to my Villa of Veracity. Freshly kidnapped from the material plane, the mortal known as Hunk. Now, darling Hunk, I just want to chat and maybe also throw you into some terrifying dungeons and force you to make horrible choices. All in the quest of that sweet, delicious knowledge about quite what makes the material plane so very, very intriguing.
I'm not from the material plane you took me from. I'm from a different material plane, so
I might.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's what you want, then I'm always happy to help super powerful people who I met over the years. So. Sorry for interrupting.
I do love it when my victims are quite so obliging. Now, you can maybe help me here too, Hunk, because I've heard suspicions that you are just one of several people across the plains who are connected through a higher being known as, let me check my notes, Chris, who we believe exists in an entirely different plane that we call the Rayal World.
That's right. I think I don't understand it, to be honest, but I've always known there was some greater connection there.
Fascinating. So, in navigating my nightmarish challenges, I hope together, darling Hunk, we can extract information from this Chris and their world too. So, Hunk, okay. My love, are you ready to be challenged?
I'm always happy to be of assistance. So, Sure, I guess. Whatever you need, I'm happy to help with.
That's enough from you. Thank you, Hunk. Okay. Now, before we begin your trials, I have been provided with some important people to thank. I love thanking people. It turns out we have been generously sponsored by the entities known as Hero Forge, Ultra Pro, Phoenix Dice, and Alchemy RPG, and supported by Idle Champions, Warriors of Waterdeep, Neverwinter, Elderwood Academy, and D&D Beyond. Also, we have a particular place in our hearts for our audience members known as the D20 Club. They have perpetually earned a place in our good books, and if you want to be wise and stay on my good side, you can join them by supporting us on Patreon. Now, if you can't join us in the Villa of Veracity live, you can always listen on your favourite podcasting app by searching for Roll Together RPG. And if you wanted to engage with us in a digital, social fashion, our influence has spread to various social media locations under the same tag, Roll Together RPG. Now, Hunk, are you quite all right there?
I'm sorry, the entity known as Chris finds all of this extremely amusing.
I've no idea why. This is who I am now. Now, Hunk, the Villa of Veracity has summoned you. Over the next 55 minutes or so, you shall traverse my villa. Behind each door is a challenge to overcome, but remember, talking is a free action. At any point, if you decide you can't possibly bear to deal with the encounter, you could always opt to impart some delicious knowledge and answer a question truthfully. Now, don't worry yourself too much. It was thought that I could maybe wreak a little bit too much havoc if I was allowed to keep you here indefinitely. So my powers to keep you here will fade after exactly 1 hour, at which point you'll be safely deposited back at the exact moment you left, and you'll be able to forget this ever happened. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we begin?
No. As I say, very happy to be of support and assistance. That tends to be my role when I'm out adventuring with my friends. So whatever you put me in front of, I will try and be as helpful as I can. And if not, I'm always truthful. I have never told a lie, and I don't intend to start now.
That's lovely to hear. And I particularly enjoy this little fiction we've got going that you are a voluntary participant in this. We can keep pretending
I didn't want to give you the impression that this is, I'm happy to help, but I know I'm here under your beneficence, that is, of course.
Very good. I like this. Shall we see what door you open?
Absolutely. I have spent lots of time with these higher powered entities, so I understand how to, you know, stay out the way.
Wise. Oh dear. You find yourself on a lovely, sunny day by the riverside.
Okay.
On the bank, there is a rowing boat, a wolf, a goat, and a demonic cabbage. On the other side, a very foolish farmer, probably one of Valka's sons, requires you to bring them all over to them. However, only yourself plus one other occupant can fit in the boat at once. How do you get them to the other side without the wolf eating the goat or the demonic cabbage eating the wolf?
This is where Hunk is reminded they have an intelligence of 7. Chris is going to roll the dice to see what Hunk does, because it's probably going to end in disaster. Incredible. Oh no. Okay. Now, Mr. Wolf, I want an assurance from you that you will not eat the cabbage. Hang on. Why has a wolf eaten the cabbage? Wouldn't the wolf eat the...
The wolf wants to eat the goat. The demonic cabbage wants to eat the wolf.
And where's the farmer in all this? Who wants to eat
the
farmer?
On the other side of the river.
And who wants to eat the farmer?
I do.
Well, that is your prerogative. Okay, I think I'll try and talk and reason with all of the different participants to make sure they do not consume each other, because that... I can't work out what order they need to go in to make sure that no one devours each other.
How would you persuade this absolutely sentient wolf that would definitely understand what you're going to say?
Well, I think I can speak to animals if I try hard enough. Hang on. Checking my very long character sheet. No, I can't.
But does Hunk think they can speak to
him? No. The intelligence is 7, not an idiot. And also a wisdom of 18, so there is.
Okay, fair.
But also a charisma of 20. I mean, ooh. If you would... I tell you what, Rebecca, I will answer a question. We'll pass it back to Chris. I will definitely answer a question, because I think Hunk will definitely try various things, but it's fair to say it'll either end with everyone having a sing-along by the riverbank or a fracas, and Hunk will be in the middle going, oh no.
So, you're sure you don't want to try? It might work.
I can't speak to animals. I can try animal handling. I'm quite good at animal handling.
Why don't you tell me? It's the knowledge I want. Tell me what you would try and do. And if you're still not convinced it will work, then talking is a free action.
I just rolled a 1 on animal handling, so I think we know what's going to happen now. So, let's make talking a free action on this
talking
one.
Talking is a free action. Okay, you have set your emergency fire alarm phrase.
Look, Hunk is a lovely, lovely person and very good at buffing other party members and healing, but when it comes to intelligence or strength-based challenges, they're going to be in trouble for this entire time.
I mean, yeah, but that is why we love Hunk so much. Also, hi, Chris.
Hello.
Okay, I have rolled the dice. That is a 30. Which is a great question. Lovely. Now, Chris, Hunk just had a little minor breakdown about all of that. Yeah, how would some of your other characters have dealt with that river crossing challenge?
Okay, my other characters. Now, I have to do a thing where I have to look at our own wiki to remember which of my characters are characters I play on stream and which are ones from home games, because otherwise I get mighty confused.
And also, I want to include, please, some of your best, and by which I mean worst, NPCs, because you DM so much and you have some terrifyingly awful NPCs.
You're going to have to call them out when you want them, because I, off the top of my head, I will think of some, but not everyone.
I mean, it's LaDouche that I particularly want to know.
LaRouche would...
No, sorry, who?
Look, LaRouche would probably kill them all.
Hmm.
But LaRouche would also, if there was like a necessity from a fae god to make this task happen, the way LaRouche's mind works, it would be a... You're asking me to do something quite pointless to make a point. So they would probably do something quite impactful to make a point back to you that it is meaningless. Because that's the way their brain works. They are, well, used to work, they're very dead. But it was all of that control. It's that level of control. LaRouche was all like, about control.
Something like kill them and then drag them over all in one go. And then be like, look, they're all over on the river and none of them have eaten each other.
I think probably because they're a vampire and therefore have various forms of mind control. Ooh. Probably some forms of making the wrong one eat the wrong one and then go, how am I supposed to complete this challenge when the cabbage ate the wrong one?
The goat has now eaten a wolf.
The goat's eaten the wolf. Yeah, like that sort of thing. Like that's the kind of thing they would do because they're that kind of, they like to change the rules of the game.
Incredible.
And that's every time I did anything as LaRouche, it was always, how can I make you feel like the choices you have made are meaningless? Which is really cruel in a villain, but that was always the intention with LaRouche.
That's such an interesting way to play a beebeg. Was that kind of their primary, how you made decisions for them?
Sort of. There was also an enduring hatred of their father specifically. And the softness they perceived in their father when their father started. There's a couple of other backstory things coming out soon that I can't talk about, but in specific in that adventure, being softer with Silver, having a sibling who was given love and affection over fear and the need to succeed really drove them quite a lot. I wanted to make a character and a beebeg specifically in game terms that was almost unfightable in game terms because they would never be there.
Yeah.
Where they would use dreams, illusions, all sorts of other things to consistently be there taunting you and making the points they wanted to make but never actually be effectable until they're in a position where they thought they would be a god and therefore untouchable, which was always the intention.
Was frustrating and terrifying and brilliant.
Well, the problem with D&D is once you encounter something and once you start rolling dice, they're a sack of hit points. Everyone's a sack of hit points, we start rolling dice. And that's fine for a lot of dangerous enemies because what you want to do is show this sack is too big or like you're trying to unravel what it is about this thing that makes it so hard to kill. Mm-hmm. In Larisha's case, I always wanted, you'll only really encounter them once and when you do, you will probably defeat them. So they need to be a constant threat without being physically there for a very long time. And it's also the, I don't know if you've read Alan Moore's Watchmen, but the villain in that, who is called Ozymandias, and he's based on Alexander the Great, and there's a lot of interesting things there. He delivers the big, here was my big plot, here's my big plan, to the heroes, and they go, oh, well, why did you tell us? He goes, we'll try and stop you. He goes, I'm not some B-list movie villain who tells you my plan when you have any chance of changing it. I did it half an hour ago. And you realize that everything he's said has already happened.
That's so cool.
But it's that sense of, he's the smartest man in the world. The whole point is that he is calculating and thinks all these things through. And his most calculating move was to go, I'll tell you what I did when it serves me for you to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted LaRouche to have that level of confidence, if not that level of intelligence. Like the things that made LaRouche fall and the things that made LaRouche die and the party win, in all cases, I also wanted to be a consequence of arrogance.
Yeah, okay.
So any time that LaRouche or anything about LaRouche's plan got damaged or affected, they needed to smile through it and go, this was always part of the plan, when they were absolutely improvising.
Yeah.
And they needed the ability, you needed the ability whenever you stopped something they were doing for them to, for the confidence start to break down. Mm-hmm. Like, the only time they would dare face you is when they were some kind of god amalgam.
Yeah.
But they also, no one will step into the negative energy plane. No one has that power apart from me. It's that, like, hubris and arrogance had to be their downfall.
That's fascinating, because the balance between the two extremes that you don't want is either, yeah, they're super powerful, but oh, this party of five adventurers could kill them quite easily, or they're super powerful and everything you do is pointless. So finding what it is about them that makes them tick so that they are this incredible powerful, but there is still a chance.
The physical stake that Silver got, yes, was the epitome of that for me. LaRouche left it in their father's body. They left it to show the power they had over Silver, and that Manzurius could just die and they could do whatever they wanted. Which meant they left a super powerful weapon that was perfect for killing them in the hands of their enemies, because they assumed that the bomb they left effectively would kill them. And it didn't. And suddenly they're going, well, it doesn't matter because I'm going to win anyway. And then in the end, they're staked through the heart with a thing designed to screw with them. Yeah. That level of, you know, that level of arrogance, I really wanted to get that in the villain, which is one of the reasons I like the character so much. I think why they've, it's such an enduring memory of, like, this was a terrible beebag. Yeah.
It was incredible. For those who watching who have no idea what we're talking about, this
good point.
Bloom Falls on Baldur's Gate. We streamed it about a year ago now. It is still, to this day, one of my favourite campaigns I've ever had the privilege to play in. Chris DM'd the most horrifyingly beautiful 12-part campaign.
You're very kind.
Do check it out. I don't think there are too many spoilers because, you know, normally by the end of 12 weeks, we do defeat the beebag. So hopefully that's not too much of a surprise.
No.
Go have a look. It's got people being impossibly talented in it.
It's a lovely show, that one. Yeah.
But also, I asked you a question and then told you which NPC you should answer it for. Do you have PCs?
I'm looking through my list of PCs that I've played on stream, and the two obvious ones to pick out are three, I suppose, Gertie, Incorrect, and Murine. Mm-hmm. Murine has zero self-confidence. Murine always does what they're told. And that was a conscious character choice while playing them, that whenever someone says, we should do this, they immediately agreed every single time. Even if they had opinions, it didn't matter. So playing low charisma is an interesting... I always find playing low charisma interesting anyway. But so Murine would do what they were told. They're quite smart. They probably work it out. But they probably just sit and think it through and then do it, and be quite a boring person on the show, actually, because they would just do it. It would take a bit of time to think it through. Exactly. Incorrect is very intelligent, but their low charisma is also lack of self-confidence, but that comes out in this facade that they put on, that they're a pirate when they're a Modron. So they probably worked out quite quickly, quite high intelligence. Gertie's not dumb. Gertie's intelligence about 11 or 12, I think. But Gertie's also an arrogant twit.
Mm-hmm. I love Gertie.
I absolutely love playing Gertie. One of my favourite things ever. It's a great voice as well. But I think Gertie would be so affronted by the whole concept of the Fae turning up and telling them what to do that there would be a certain amount of why should I's and you can't tell me what to do's and... stamping your feet and being a bit grumpy and then probably doing it anyway, or sort of half getting it right. And yeah, that's Gertie in a nutshell, basically.
Well then, thank you very much. Chris, shall we return to our challenge?
I think it's Hunk standing in the middle of the river, just going, oh no, it's all gone horribly wrong.
Probably what happens is that Hunk sort of with an appeasing smile on their face starts to, you know, just like gently stroke the wolf and gently stroke the goat and gently stroke the demonic cabbage and then try and like politely shuffle them towards each other with a little lovely speech about everyone should just be friends, and then, yes, you know, stands back to survey their work and then carnage, blood, cabbage leaves, at which point the Fae will roll her eyes and whisk you safely over to the river where you can see a bright, shining, blue painted door waiting for you. Would you like to go through?
I mean, the last one was so successful. Sure, I'll keep going.
I mean, you can't do worse. Surely this is an incentive.
Every day is a new challenge.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. This is...
Faye also has your vocal tick.
It is my... I am waiting to work out what my dice...
I know. Tick, heard it a thousand times before.
Have no shame. So is it wise to goad your question master, Chris?
Is it wise to stream on the internet as a job? I mean, these are all things we ask ourselves.
That is an incredibly good question.
I mean, Hunk wouldn't think that.
Do you go through this door?
Yep.
You pull open this bright blue shining door on this beautiful sunny riverside and instead enter a dark, shadowy, softly lit room. Shadowy not in the creepy sense, but in its very tastefully lit with little pools of light from lamps giving light around the space. It is richly furnished in purples, dark wood, velvet with embellishments picked out in gold leaf. Everything is of the best quality and polished to perfection. There is a finely carved wooden door over the room, and in one corner there is one exception to how rich, ornate, and well-kept everything is. There is, you can see the shape of a freestanding frame draped in a dust sheet in one corner of the room. It is covered in cobwebs and dust and looks to have been untouched for a long time.
Okay, I'm probably just gonna cross the room. Hunk's not an adventurous type. Like, no prodding. There's no need to prod unless someone asks you to prod it. Tends to be the modus operandi with Hunk. I spend a lot of time with Hunk drawing back the idea that I want to do everything, just going, live and let live is perfectly fine. Something that I really struggle to do in my own life. So I think I'll walk through the room and look around at all the nice things, see that that looks a bit different. And is the Fae around?
Not physically present in the room, but you can feel her in your head.
So I can just go through the door?
It's up to you what you do in this room. I'm just here to observe.
Then I'll just go through the door and look at the painting with a kind of... It's probably something dangerous and scary there, but I don't need to ruffle any feathers. I'll just keep going.
To be very clear, you ignore the dust sheet. You do not lift it. You do not touch it. You go straight through.
Yeah, I think so.
You open the door and walk through with absolutely no problem. Well, that's fascinating. I thought curiosity was an overriding trait of mortals.
I have found through various travels with various people that there's nothing wrong with curiosity and wanting to explore, but also caution and carefulness, especially with someone as powerful as yourself, go hand in hand with that. And I have always seen my job as being more to help out with other people's curiosity. Like if someone asks me to do something or if they need someone to pick up the pieces, that tends to be me. But I don't need to go out into the world as a whole or do the dangerous thing just in case.
Now I was feeling slightly cheated by not seeing what would have happened, but then you were so nice to me that maybe we'll just let you walk straight through this door. What do you think?
That would be very kind of you if that's what you want to do. But also, if you have a purpose to challenge or like that, then you need to challenge, I understand.
Hunk, darling, you're tipping slightly over into the sycophant. No one likes a suck-up. Let's see what's behind this door.
I hasten to disagree.
I don't. I believe my companion, Question Master, the illusionist, had a
similar room recently.
Had a victim navigate this very room very recently, and I don't want to play again. Let's try again. As you pull open this ornately carved mahogany door, you enter a room. Now, I'm not going to describe the features of the room because you don't notice them. All you notice as you walk in, you are transfixed by a figure with their back to you. They seem to be a minotaur, very short shorts. And as you enter the room, they turn and say, well, 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 but in an American accent that I can't do. And you gasp, it is you, but wearing an evil beard.
I already have a moustache goatee.
It's more evil. It's an evil beard, Hunk. It's evil. Guess which question master wrote this question?
Tom.
It was Tom. It's an evil beard. You are forced to confront your own self. How cruel. How thrilling.
But it is me.
It is Hunk with an evil beard. It's very evil.
Are they making any physically threatening movements?
Yes. I obviously just rolled a nat 20, so absolutely. They are. Turn to meet you with a cynical smile that you have never seen on your own face before and raise a... What weapon do you usually carry,
huh? I don't have one.
They have a really scarily spiky mace.
Oh.
Hmm.
Hey there, bud. What's going on? You seem like you might want to do me harm, but I have no reason to do you any harm, and I don't think you have any reason to do me any harm. So why don't we put the big spack mace down and have a conversation?
You are very persuasive. Let's see.
Oh, I'm going to roll it if you'll let me.
I mean, I rolled a 2, so...
I have a plus 13 to persuasion.
The evil beard twitches and the evil Hunk's lip curls, and they look ready to charge, but then the mace falters in their grip, and it looks like maybe they are having second thoughts. You have one more chance. You're getting through to them.
What is it that you want? I'm Hunk, by the way. You look a lot like me, but you're clearly not me, so who are you?
I'm the British version of you. I have an evil beard.
Well, that is how British people roll. Okay. Good and evil are absolute terms which don't really apply in a real world context, so... what does that mean exactly?
One of the question masters just sort of stuck it on my face whilst laughing maniacally and told me it was evil. I've been trapped here for a very long time.
Oh, I just started being trapped here and I was told it's only going to last an hour.
I'm something they call an NPC, and that means that I never get to leave.
That is a shame. If you took your beard off and stuck it on me, could we swap places and then you get to go and I stay and then wait till the next one comes along?
Then you'd be stuck forever.
It's not ideal, but I got lots of things I can do that mean I wouldn't be stuck forever, but maybe they can negate all that magic stuff.
This was a magical beard that the maniacally laughing, slightly weirdly poppity question master said needed to be attached to a face to have any sort of corporeal form. Maybe if you help me get rid of it, maybe I would be free.
I can do that, or I can try to do that at least. Let's see. The beard's not undead, isn't it? I can't turn it.
It might be.
Okay, good to know. As an action, I can create a non-magical item of choice in an occupied space than 10 feet of me. Beard trimmer? To be able to... I can... It lasts for 4 hours. I will make a magical... It's not magical. It is magically created, but it is non-magical. I will use my music to sculpt a beard trimmer. Actually, no, Hunk is not a beard trimmer, it's a razor. I will sculpt a razor, and then very delicately, if British Hunk will allow, will shave them.
Very still.
Shave the beard off them, yeah.
As the final evil hair falls away from their face, there is a pop, and evil beard Hunk vanishes in a spray of bubbles.
I would do a sort of pleasant nod to myself of like, that was a good choice. And then we'll just fold the razor up and put it in a pocket. It'll last for another... 3 hours and 45 minutes, presumably, and just nod to myself with a year.
Do you head over to the door on the other side of the room that has just materialized?
Yeah, I think so.
As you reach out to the handle, you suddenly find yourself frozen in space as the Fae. You are finding these things far too easy.
Am I?
I wanted some challenge in these challenge rooms. I also wanted to see how you'd fight, as there is very little recorded evidence of it anywhere.
Oh, I'm a cleric apiece. I traditionally don't fight, or if I do, it's usually in support of my allies, but I mean, in the first campaign I was in, this is slightly meta-theoretical, but in the first adventure I had, there we go, I carried an axe because I thought that's what adventurers did, but I never used it once, and I didn't need to. And I imagine that in my life before that adventure, I carried a weapon in case of defending myself. But I think over time, as I've gotten stronger, I've moved further and further away from physical violence.
Fascinating. And you have really given me knowledge, but I also wanted entertainment, and watching you shave someone for 15 minutes didn't quite tick that box for me, so I think you owe me an answer.
Well, Rebecca, I would point out that there are websites on the internet where you can watch that to your heart's content.
I was just going to get it, and you went there for me. Thank you so much. Right, now you definitely
That'd be a great ASMR website. I've not even thought of that. Like, watching someone shave someone else very deadly, the face, obviously, but shave someone else very deadly, that sounds amazing. I do like ASMR videos.
I've got to ask you a question really fast so we don't have to unpack that.
Nothing wrong with liking ASMR videos.
I'm just still moving on.
Well, you don't have a beard, but there's a lovely noise when you clean shave where you can hear the hair follicles go. You can hear each cut. I've got quite a fulsome beard. When you use a straight edge razor, you can hear the sort of slight cut of the razor. It's very pleasant.
Cool. Twitch chat, please tell me if it is pleasant or if I am right to be disturbed by this. I'm currently disturbed.
All right, fine.
Chris, please can I
say nothing about my proclivities? That's fine.
You're allowed to. I'm just allowed to have opinions on them. Not even opinions. Impulse, reflect, response.
That's fair.
Chris, how much do you like to bring real world experiences into your games?
Oh, God. I mean, it's obviously make believe. Everything about what we do is make believe. And for me, there's a level of make-believe beyond that we're all people on a screen talking to each other in that is fantasy. We're not pretending it's like in the near future or anything like that. It's very obviously like gnomes and goblins. And therefore, that's a safety net. But it also means you can put things in there which have real-world application that aren't necessarily real-world versions of that, which I quite like. I don't like using games to explore any of the big isms or phobias or hatreds or anything like that because I'm a trans person. I get enough of it on a daily basis. I don't need more. But playing characters who don't feel entirely human, playing characters who don't feel entirely real, which we can have. We can have semi-fictional characters. We can have characters who are robots trying to be real people, you know. And yeah. Of course, you can then bring in some of your own experience of, what is my gender? But would I sit there and go, yes, this is what I'm doing with this? No, not especially. It's not how I start with that. But there is a universality to love, loss, success that I've definitely brought into things before. There are definitely, like, we were talking about LaRouche earlier. I was a very arrogant, cocky, confident young man when I was still a young man. And are there elements of that I wanted to exorcise? Yes, of course. Are there elements I wanted to lampoon? Yeah. But also, was it... Do I want that to make that something that's heartfelt, where you can actually... I mean, the best villains, to my mind, are ones that you hate, but also slightly empathize with. Mm. So, did I want to bring that in a little bit? Yeah, I did. But I didn't sit there going, I will do this. It will be ornate and carefully calculated and planned. I never think like that. Like... You can accuse me of being calculating, but not calculated. I think that's the
I get that.
Difference. Yeah.
That's a very important distinction, I think. One feels accurate and pre-planned and sensible, and then one feels that more manipulative.
Exactly. Yeah, like, you and I have joked before, and I've joked with other people on this channel before, about how much DM prep goes into DMing and how the practicalities of which monsters go where and what their CRs are and that sort of thing. You need to do that, obviously. But I spend quite a lot of time going, who are these five characters? Who are these NPCs? And just thinking about all the things they might say to each other at different points in time and how different mindsets and how they might interact with each other. And then whenever they come up in game, there's always an opportunity to go, oh, I've already thought of something like this, or a nice sentence I could say, or a nice turn of phrase. And I think a lot of that is about, where have I heard this phrase before? Where have I seen this before? Where have I experienced this before? That's very metatextual, but I think you get the point I'm making.
No, I really do.
Yeah. there's a level of complexity of real life that comes into game. Yeah.
I've been talking with a friend, another Chris, actually, who is an exceptionally brilliant DM, about catharsis.
There are two of us?
I know. He's Canadian, it's fine.
I'm sure he's lovely.
He's very good. But we've been having interesting conversations about catharsis in D&D. Mm. And that idea of obviously going, here is this huge ism I face in my daily life. I'm going to put it in my game so I can murder them all. It's some people's thing and great sometimes, but also it can be a much more gentle version of that, of just like you were saying, here is a part of myself that I haven't quite come to terms with, or that gives me grief in my day-to-day life. I can put it in my character and I don't have to use all of the diplomacy and tact and safety mechanisms I do in real life. If someone's a dick to me, I can punch them, is always just quite a nice...
You can. I'm not saying that you shouldn't. And also, as you know, I'm a big advocate of each to their own. If you want to play a game where you're on a map and it's all 5-foot increments, you be my guest. That is absolutely people's play. But I think on a rhetorical triangle basis, I don't want to... I don't see the value in hammering a point home.
No, of course.
That doesn't mean that you shouldn't. And I like that there are artists out there whose response to... the world being terrible in some ways is to push back quite hard against it. And I do in my personal life. There's no denying that there is an element of that that is. But logical extrapolation of, I don't like this in real life, so I will kill it in a game, doesn't help anyone change their mind. Mm. We could all turn to Boris Johnson right now and say, here are all the logical errors you have made and why people don't like you. And I think the people who support him are aware of those logical errors as well. I don't like to think of people as being inherently like so blinkered that they don't have rational thought. That seems mad. And the ability, therefore, to go, we don't see eye to eye on this because you excuse this and I don't. If I then go and kill it in a game, I'm just digging that hole deeper. What do I gain? What does the other person gain? It's doubling down. Whereas the ability to go, hang on, let's take Boris as a great example. Boris is a fascinating human being. Terrible, awful human being, but fascinating. Imagine the kind of person that it takes to be so self-secure that laws don't apply to you, and thus you take on a role of the highest lawmaker in a country. Like, that's a D&D thing for me. I now want to have a villain, not like Boris is a villain and awful and therefore we should all kill him, but someone who makes quite draconian laws for a civilization or a situation and then doesn't follow them themselves at all. And when someone turns to them and says, you made these laws and you don't give a shit about them, as someone go, they don't apply to me because I'm better than you. There's a villainous trait where I can go, I understand that person now, you know?
Yeah. So I think they're two very different things. I think absolutely there is the very on the nose isms in game, gonna kill you because you're bad. Mm. And I agree that that's completely pointless. But sometimes I don't think you don't need to be trying actively to actually change things in the real world. It can just make you feel better and be a healthy way. Yeah. Deal with stuff. But then I think you have exactly said what I mean in terms of the other way of doing it, the less on the nose. Mm. But just like, this is a thing in the real world that has huge consequences that are negative for a huge number of people. We're not going to idolize that, lionize that, tell him he's a special genius snowflake. We're not going to touch that. But look at these character traits and things that we can pull into a game and then play with that, and it's interesting, and we don't have all the real world baggage of, but actually there are real people at stake and we have to have these morals. I think it was, I was talking to Tom a few weeks ago now on Talk Together about the moral flaws of adventuring that obviously you shouldn't just go off and earn all this gold. Why don't you go and invest in the infrastructure and make sure all the peasants have plumbing and that kind of thing? Like,
rich people don't pay taxes.
Exactly. And so indeed, we have the on the nose catharsis of bring in a terrible thing and then kill them to death so you feel good. Yes. But then you also have the, this stuff is too painful really to touch in real life. But if we strip it of all its consequences and all of the real world stakes, then it becomes something that's just interesting to explore because we're people.
It defangs the issue.
That thing, yes.
And that's a good thing. art that is aggressive, art that is barbed, art that is making a point. There's nothing wrong with that. And I know there's a lot of good art out there that does that. I also know there are people out there who need that art to feel like they have any say in the world. And I can completely understand that as well. It's not my taste. Because it's not my taste, I tend not to do it. That doesn't mean that it's not a thing you should do, but it does mean that, because, I mean, this speaks to our privilege. I studied rhetoric. I'm aware of this idea that there is truly no point to logically explaining a fallacy, because I don't care. Like, rhetoric, the open of rhetorics opens with, there are the facts and people do not care for them. Mm. And it's a hard thing of life to go, but this is real and true. Yeah, it doesn't matter. People don't care. And rhetoric is less about, it's logos, ethos, and pathos. It's less about the logistics of it, but ethos and pathos, breaking down why people feel the way they feel, or exactly, Doc. I think are more valuable. I think that they affect longer term change. Mm. Breaking down the logical fallacy can give you short term relief, but without the other two, all you're ever going to do is go, that person's a dick. Cool. What made them a dick? Mm. Where are the other dicks who are exactly like them coming from? Surely this is an endemic problem. I feel that's a more useful analysis and breakdown. Although, as for my friend who is a politician, just point out, that doesn't win you elections.
Very true. So, yeah.
So that's a bit heavy and a bit sad, but
It's really interesting, and still I think fascinating that you would say that's not something you want to bring in your games in general, but you would absolutely bring in a Boris Johnson-esque villain. Because those... I think this is what I mean. You don't have to go, ha 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 ha, here is a blonde floppy-haired ex-mayor who's now a... But the traits that we find in real life,
well,
we can then bring in without baggage can be a fascinating factor of D&D.
I would just take an authority figure and have them be venal. This idea that the rules don't apply to me because I'm richer and better than you. And how... Have that be a quest giver. Because then the party go, this person gives us quests to do, but they don't, they tell the people to do stuff and then don't do it at all themselves. And of course, because, you know, everyone we play with is a liberal, we would all go, that's wrong, and we should fight that person. And then be the DM that goes, they haven't got a stat block. They're a commoner.
Mm.
What are you going to do? Because then the players can go, do we want to kill someone for being a bit of a dick? Do we want to try and change the world to make it better? Because then you're talking about effective change. Because if this person is generally liked by a lot of people but ignores rules constantly and gives you a lot of money and has made you heroes of this castle and has given you rooms and has given you all this free shit because they can, because they take all this money from people, suddenly are you part of the problem? Mm-hmm. But that's something I would have like as a little window dressing to one part of an adventure. Yep. A small bit over there, to play with the idea of how that feels and how you would re-engage with it, because then you're not changing, you're not going, look how dumb Boris is, you're going, this kind of corruptive nature corrupts absolutely and corrupts people around it and creates this cycle of corruption that will never change unless you make a substantive change in life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant, which I think is essentially coming back to what we find so many times, which is there are so many ways to play D&D.
Yeah,
the way that you like. You can play in an entire... smash, grab, catharsis, I'm gonna murder bad people that actually exist in my fantasy life with no consequences. You can have, I don't want to touch real life with a barge pole, everything is fairies and goblins. And you can have, oh, maybe this is an allegory for some of the like difficult political systems and corruptions that go on. Or anything in between all those things.
I come from a place of privilege. I know I come from a place of privilege. I'm very aware of my privilege and that I have the privilege to go. I don't need to run games to get rid of my anger. That is a privilege. Of the many privileges I have, the privilege to be able to go, I'm annoyed, but it's not actually going to affect me, or it is, but in such a way that won't impact. I don't need a game to get that feeling out. And that is a place of privilege. That doesn't mean that that's incorrect or correct. It's just down to how you want to play.
Yeah, again, as so many things, no right or wrong comes down to how you want to play, and as long as everyone around the table is agreed on how they want to play, have a great time.
I mean, there's an interesting rhetorical argument that is worth having. We're completely off topic now, Rebecca. I'm sorry.
I mean, I am trying to get us back to a room, but what rhetorical argument is what
I'll make a small point and then leave it. It's fine. there is... rhetoric, the whole point of rhetoric is that there are no right or wrong answers. And also the whole point of rhetoric is a great way of going. There's very rarely a factual, this is correct, this is incorrect. Very, very rarely. Even facts have half-lives. The more you can get into your head, and this is a message to, was a message to me when I'm younger, and a message to everyone who's listening to this as well. If you think you know something to be absolutely fundamentally correct or true, you're falling into a mindset where something else is absolutely and fundamentally wrong. And that's not useful. It is more useful to go, what is this particular shade of grey I have found myself in, and how does that shade of grey affect it?
That is a very good point. I mean, as you know full well, this is something I very much disagree with you about.
God.
Thanks, Chris. Because I believe in God. So I absolutely believe that there is some kind of objective truth and some kind of objective right and wrong. But we probably don't need to have that conversation right now.
No, we don't. But I don't think those two beliefs are impossible for them to coexist either.
No,
You having Christian beliefs doesn't mean that there can't be shades of grey as well.
Oh, so many.
Yeah.
It gets scary when there are no shades of grey. And also, we have two very different belief systems, but they come together in the middle of just be kind to people, please.
Don't assume the worst.
Always good. Go out of your way to help people if you can.
We're getting into Christian stuff now, which I'm less of a fan.
Oh, well.
Charity, what's this? No.
We all know that you are a soulless, horrible person who never helped anyone.
Classic atheist, husk of a human.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's why you're just the worst, Chris. I, of course, am a sanctimonious angel. Shall we go back to a challenge room? So, with those very deep and meaningful conversations, we're back to Hunk.
I can have deep and meaningfuls too if you want. That's fine.
Please don't. Please, no.
Chris said something about rhetoric and various words with os at the end that I don't know.
That's fortunate, I think, at this point. So, where were we? You foiled the obvious combat encounter and instead...
I mean, I'm no good in combat.
Gave the Minotaur. the Fae will... Having spoken to Chris and satisfied with their answer, you find yourself unfrozen. Do you reach towards the door and go through it?
If there are more doors to go through, I will go through those doors.
There is a door in front of you. Ooh, that is a 2. Oh, this is going to be delightful.
Okay.
Hunk, you find yourself in a chamber. It is stone walls, bare, torches flicker on the walls, giving you enough light to see by, but not much more. In front of you, there are 3 arches, each with 3 ornate doors, and in front of each is a guard. You know, you find yourself intrinsically aware of the fact that one guard is only going to tell nothing but the truth. One guard is going to tell nothing but lies. And the third will either lie or tell the truth, depending on what they feel like. One door leads to safety, one to doom, and one to moral ambiguity. Guess which one of us wrote this question? Which one must you walk through?
Now, I know the entity known as Chris knows the answer because they're yelling it in my head, but I'm going to ignore that. what would Hunk do? Pretty sure Hunk can cast his own truth.
Do it. That's amazing.
Hunk cannot cast his own truth. Hunk assumes everyone is telling the truth.
Does Hunk not have his own truth?
No, because Hunk assumes everyone's telling the truth. Hunk believes people are honest. Hunk has a very high insight role as well. I'd probably just use
that. If Hunk knows for a fact that 1.5 of them are lying, would they have a sleep and then prep sort of truth in the morning?
Potentially, but that feels like a cop-out. They miss that.
Cop-out's a fine. What would Hunk do?
No. Hunk is not a cop-out kind of person. Okay. I think what Hunk would do is go to one of them and using an insight check, ask them if they tell the truth. Do you tell the truth or are you one of the ones that lies? And would roll an insight check on that. 23.
you would get from the second one, the one in the middle, the absolute certainty that they always tell the truth.
Then I would take that at face value and go through their door. Hug is a very straight-minded...
The one who tells the truth isn't necessarily in front of the safe door. You do not know.
Oh, well, then which, I go, which door should I go through then?
Not this one.
Should I go through the first one or the third one?
It depends what you're looking for. Moral ambiguity or safety?
I mean, I prefer safety over moral ambiguity.
Then that's the third one.
Okay. Can I go to the third one? How about you? What do you think?
I think this door is great.
What do you think about the other two doors?
I think they're great as well.
Wow, Chris is really shouting the answer in my head. Hunk's not smart enough to know the clever way around it. I could try and use calm emotions to try and calm them all down.
They all seem very calm. Manipulative, but calm.
Manipulative, but calm. Title of your autobiography. Cruel.
I have neither of those things.
I know. It's being cruel. I think I would take the second one. Hunk would take the second one at face value. They'd go, all right then, well, this one seems to be a bit gung-ho about everything, but you were quite clear with me and quite precise, and I trust you, so I'll go through door number three.
Do you want to check in with the first guard? So just straight through door number
three? I suppose while we're here, hey guard number one, how do you feel about the doors?
I love them all.
One, two, and three?
They're doors. I like doors.
How about door number two specifically?
It's a door.
In comparison to the other two doors, what's behind them?
Door number two is the best door.
Is it? Punk is holding their head in their hands, going, "There must have been a better solution to this." I am going to resist the urge as Chris to gamify it out and do what Hunk would do, which is go through the door, third door, because that's the one that the first one said was the best. And they rolled an inside check and it was quite positive about the person, so they'd go through that door.
You safely walk your way through the third door.
Yeah. Hunk would do that. Hunk would not ask, because I know the answer to this one, what would the other two say?
Excellent. That is the gamified version. Yeah. Well done for resisting. The Fae is quite...
harder with three, because what the other two say isn't necessarily a given.
Yes. Hmm. There is a more complicated way around it, but I like Hunk's version best of just assuming people tell the truth. Is lovely. Fascinating. Do you just do that? Do you just believe people are honest even when faced with quite powerful evidence to the contrary?
I believe that people are more comfortable and happier when they speak the truth, and I'm insightful enough to be able to see that in people. So if someone speaks the truth and seems comfortable and happy, then I assume that that is the case, because that's what I have noticed of people all over. People generally want to be honest, and they want to be kind, and they want to be nice. And if it's a struggle and that's visible, then I would assume, like, for example, I got this very close friend, Harmony, and she's great. She's a really lovely person. I know there's something in her past she's not talking to me about, and I don't know the full story about, but I know something is there, and I know that she'll talk about it when the time is right, but I don't need to pressure her to find out more about it, and I don't need to ask her a question that she might feel compelled to lie to. I'll wait until she talks to me. You see, it's all about how you engage with the people around you and give them space and time.
Gosh, how sweet.
You really don't like someone being this kind and generous, do you?
It's really problematic for me, yeah.
Does it challenge your worldview? Hunk would not ask that.
I'm detecting a certain amount of sass from Hunk.
Hunk would never be that sarky or pushy. Not a chance.
Then I think we have just enough time that I want to speak to your higher being one more time.
You're always welcome to.
Yes, I am, aren't I? So, that is... Oh, it's a good question. Chris, hi. What is something about your propensity for rhetoric? What is something about your non-D&D real life that might surprise us?
I mean, I don't know. My life's pretty much an open book and has been for a while. Like, I'm pretty honest about everything that's happened to me. I've been married twice. I think people know that. I've got a child. People know that as well, I think. I'm relatively upper mid. I think people know that as well. I'm trying to think of something that's different that people might not be aware of. People know I've got two dogs and that they're great.
Everyone knows about the dogs. We love the dogs.
Like, I don't keep many things secret. I mean, there are things I don't talk about, but they're not. That's also because they're painful to me, so I don't talk about them, you know? Like, if there are things that I had that were secret that I wanted to share, I would share them. And if there are things that I don't share, I don't share them because I don't want to. And I think if I did, it would hurt me or someone else. That's not useful or helpful. I think, like, I've talked about my mental health before. I think that's people know that I'm not exactly all with it. But I suppose this might be useful, the useful thing to share that I haven't really shared fully before. My anxiety disorder that I have is very similar to other ones people have. It's about trauma. And it's probably something I've had for a very, very long time. And I take medication for it, and sometimes it's difficult, but I still manage to do everything I do and love everyone I love and live exactly how I want to live as best possible. And I'm a strong advocate of go and get treatment, go and get medication and take it. Yeah, I think that's an important statement for the internet. I spent so long doing the whole, no, I'm fine, everything's fine, and it wasn't. And I still have the propensity to go, I don't want to be over-medicated. I don't want to take medication all the time. I want to just be fine with it. And actually, no, take it. You will be happier and better. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris. You're wonderful. We like you very much.
Thank you.
That is approaching the end of our time. Are you good to jump back in and have Hunk say goodbye to the Fae?
Yeah. Sure.
So, the Fae doesn't care. The Fae has no feelings. The Fae jumps straight back.
Rebecca, can you now play a person with no empathy or feelings at all? And I'll try and play a pleasant idiot. There we go.
I don't know what you mean. I have no feelings or empathy.
And I am a pleasant idiot, yeah.
You're very pleasant. Where were we? You had just successfully negotiated your way through the correct door that didn't lead to doom or to moral ambiguity.
I mean, through almost entirely chance, but yes.
But instead to a very important and meaningful conversation. Well done. So, Hunk, as you step through this door, feeling absolutely certain in your knowledge of other people's truthfulness, you find yourself back in the tastefully decorated foyer area that you arrived in exactly 55 minutes ago.
Will you look at that?
The Fae appears again in front of you. Slightly malevolent glint in her eyes. She goes, I have tolerated our time together. You were not the worst visitor I've ever had.
I'm sorry, it wasn't more to your liking. Time I could bring you something, a gift that would help this.
I mean, you imparted a lot of incredibly useful knowledge. It was very fruitful, and I hate saying nice things. It was informative. Just, you are so pleasant.
You know, it's
honest.
It's okay to lack things and to have people see that you lack things.
Uh-huh. Your time is up. Please leave. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Except me.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, I guess, and maybe I'll see you again soon.
Get out.
Okay.
And you find yourself with only the strangest dream of an incredibly strange archfey taking you through a weird set of dungeons and emotionally strange questions.
Hung's currently in Crash and Burn. We had the first episode on, was it, Monday, Tuesday? So... I'm saying, just after this random combat, has now suddenly had a moment and is now with a bunch of randoms they've never met before. Oh, okay.
Enjoy. You just have lingering memories of being bullied for how nice you are, and you just feel a little unsettled, and then you remember how incredibly nice you are, and no one can make you therefore feel bad about it, and it's all fine.
The only person who could is not in the adventure I'm currently in, so we're okay.
Is that me? Is that Harmony?
It's Harmony. Look, you and I both know that Harmony murdered a bunch of kids, and...
Where is the proof?
There isn't any, Rebecca. We talked about it. Now, if Harmony reveals to Hunk that their positivity in their belief in their friend was misplaced... That's going to make them really struggle with the belief that people are genuinely quite good at heart.
Well, no.
No.
No one should ever cast Hunk and Harmony in a future show.
They spend the rest of their gaming adventures not knowing, and that'll be everyone will be better for it.
Probably, yeah. To be fair. And that is us out of time. So thank you everyone once again for joining us for Talking is a Free Action. You will find us here every Friday 6 to 7 BST, and on Mondays or Tuesdays, Mondays and Tuesdays at 6 to 9 p.m. we stream our D&D games. I think the Fae calls them documentaries, where you can follow the adventures of people just like Hunk. In fact, it is people exactly like Hunk, because we have Crash and Burn. Chris, when is Crash and Burn on?
It's on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. BST, and sees, I mean, I could say the character names, but you probably don't know them. It's me, Dave, Sean, Mike, and Emma. All in an arc about the gate crashes. Em's playing Murta, who was an NPC in Ancient Antics. I'm playing Hunk again. And the other three have brought fantastic characters, including Sean's brought a character that he used to play in a home game and has now graduated to a new version on stream, and who is a delightfully odd fun. So
incredible. Yes. And DM'd by the incredible Tom Yantis.
Yes, it is.
First campaign with Roll Together, and he is the most beautiful chaos you have ever seen. Please.
It's somehow very Tom. The flavor's all extremely Tom.
It's incredible. There are other evil beards, is the question. And if not, when will they find us, Tom?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
And then on Monday, do we have a new campaign starting, or are we?
Oh, hang on. I'm not sure. I think we've got one more episode of.
We are finishing Ancient Antics. So join us for the Ancient Antics. They all begin with A's, and they're all DM'd by Emma.
Emma likes alliteration.
It is not Ancient Antics. That was before. This is Anarchy in the Astral Sea. There is yet more chaos. Em's DMing is incredible. It is more delightful. Silliness. Do tune in for the finale on Monday.
Big ethical and logical problems to deal with there as well. My goodness me.
There's a theme running through. I just like hitting things until they die.
We'll have this debate another time.
Streams at twitch.tv/rolltogetherRPG. Our VODs are available immediately after the stream to catch up, or you can find all our content on YouTube a few days later. And don't forget, you can also enjoy them as a podcast. Many thanks once again to our beautiful D20 Club on Patreon. If you'd like to support us, please do. You can do so from as little as one of your local currencies per month. And thank you again as well to all of our lovely sponsors and supporters. Now, Hunk, you may now enter the final exit portal to go home to your not TARDIS. But as you go, please remember the ancient Question Master proverb. Just one final bit of torment for us both as we go on our way. Stay classy at the table.
Is that for me or for Hunk?
Yes. Thank you very much. Goodbye.